It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Nell.
I don't know if you've caught your breath, Liam, but this Sunday night I couldn't watch the last 20 minutes without pacing up and down and pacing almost a hole in my floor there. It's To The Last Drop. We're back. The Springboks in the semi-final by the skin of their teeth. And I'm Brendan Nell. I'm with Liam Del Calm. Liam, could you watch that in that press box, or were you biting your nails as well?
The strange thing is there's no time to bite nails or to do anything other than focus on the job, because I had a very, very tight deadline to meet at final whistle. So the time for emotion, or as you said earlier, the biting of nails and sort of keeping fingers crossed, that kind of thing. Of course, you feel, you know, some of the emotion because you want the box to win the game and sort of to move forward. But you can't be too distracted. So it's about getting the words on the screen that takes priority. And it's only afterwards where you can sort of sit down and just, you know, take a breath and try and take it all in. The previous evening, I have to say, the quarterfinal between Ireland and New Zealand, the experience was slightly different. I didn't have as tight a deadline, so you could actually sort of take more of the game in. And I just found that also a thoroughly absorbing game of high quality. I mean, the technical excellence in that game, the tackles, the way those two teams went at each other. It was a little different from the game the day after. I mean, emotionally, obviously, that felt different. But I just felt that Ireland-New Zealand game was on another level. I mean, I've been to a few World Cup games in my time, but that was right up there.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've spoken about this before, that you don't really get to see much of the other games while you're at a final. But those other two quarterfinals were, it was chalk and cheese in terms of quality, intensity, yeah. every superlative that you could probably think of to describe it. And then also the other thing I saw quite interestingly today, that Ireland-New Zealand game was the highest ball in play of any World Cup match. There was over 41 minutes, which is huge. I mean, you don't often hear that at all. So just shows you how much the ball was in play and how intense it was as well.
Well, if you have the one team at kickoff take it through 30-plus phases to sort of set the tone, and then the other team at the end trying to win the game, taking it through, 36 or so phases to obviously try and secure the win. That in itself tells the tale of the match. There was, you know, the willingness to lose there wasn't particularly high. I mean, both teams went at it, hammer and tongs. And it's, you know, if we get another game like that in the World Cup, the tops that I'd love to be there.
Yeah, I must admit. I mean, I thought the game I was at the Ireland South Africa game, that was intensity. But I mean, even watching on TV, you could feel these two were almost a step up from that game as well. So,
yeah, and look, I mean, the South Africa France game intensity also through the roof. You could probably make the argument in the collisions, some of the collisions were bigger, but there was an excellence at ruck time and in broken play from the – not just broken play, actually, even from first phase. I mean, I'm just thinking of the Will Jordan try. The willingness to attack and sort of just seize opportunity when it arrives in that game, that was just next level.
Yeah, as I said, the last 20 minutes of our game, you could sense the tide was turning a bit, but I must admit, I was very relaxed after halftime watching it on TV. But I thought France missed the trick there, because we were on the ropes just before when Eben went off and the 20 minutes after halftime. If they had scored there, I don't think we would have probably come back. But then that last 20 minutes, geez, what a game! And I think, I don't know how many South Africans actually went to work on Monday morning, but I know there must have been quite a few sore heads and a few sleepless nights after that, because it just was so draining. And I think a lot of people don't realize as well, as you say, you had to get words on the screen. Often, we talk about having a beer after the game, and it's often just to actually just It's when that all that emotion sort of floods back and hits you. And I've been there before in other games. And you actually realize afterwards how much what you've just watched and not why you're doing it, because you're doing your job, obviously.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Of course, the unfortunate thing at the start of France, it's so far north of the city that you go straight from the game into a press conference. Then there's a mixed zone with certain players. And then it becomes a mad dash to try and scramble to the last metro to get a train back to wherever you are in Paris. So you don't have time afterwards to sit down and sort of take it all in and reflect, perhaps. That's the only down thing about having matches at the Stade de France.
Yeah, no, it is quite. I must admit, I've missed the last World Cup final in 2007. Myself and one of our friends, JJ Harum, so we missed the last metro, so we had to try and get a taxi, and that became a bit of a mad hash. And we eventually bundled into a taxi with an English couple who were, for want of a better word, snogging each other, and didn't even notice that we got into their taxi, but we had got a taxi that way. So sometimes it's very strange the way you leave stadiums. So
you have to find a way.
And as the box did.
I know I mentioned the mix zone earlier, and sometimes you go to a mix zone and you don't get an awful lot. But after an emotional game like that, the Springboks against France, you can still feel the tension afterwards. And we certainly felt it with Jesse Creel, who obviously played out of his socks in that game. Had one of his better games in the Bok jersey, and in fact was asked that question afterwards.
Now, Jesse, would you say it's your best performance ever in a Bok jersey?
I'm not sure. I think it's not for me to decide. I think the most important thing is we got the result. We got what we came here for tonight. There's still a lot of rugby to be played in this tournament. Another two big games, and obviously not looking past next weekend semi-final. So, it's just about getting back to the drawing board tomorrow, getting the bodies fresh, and, all eyes on Saturday.
Did you get any stitches there on top?
Yeah, I got a few. I don't know how many. It's quite a big cut.
What happened?
I think I just hit a guy's hip or something. It was just a bit of bone on bone. But luckily, head's all good, and it was just a cut. So luckily these things heal.
Jesse, what did you talk about when you stood under the post after 2 minutes?
We simulate these things throughout the week, and I think as South Africans, we're a pretty resilient bunch, and I think it's. All things that we've experienced before in rugby games. And, I thought we bounced back well. And obviously, taking no credit away from the French team, they're an unbelievable side. We knew they'd come out firing in front of a massive crowd. And, I think the response was good.
In terms of personal satisfaction, not just for you, but for the team, I mean, obviously, you've prepped for this game for a while. In terms of the squad, how satisfying was this response?
Yeah, very satisfying win. Obviously, any win in a Springbok jersey is satisfying. I think after November's loss against them, we felt like we were disappointed, and we wanted to make that right. So it was nice to get an opportunity tonight to fix that.
How did you experience the crowd in that first 10 minutes? How hectic was it?
Yeah, it's one of the loudest crowds I've ever played in front of. I think the French were unbelievable, and I think it's an awesome atmosphere and experience. Very privileged to have been out there and play tonight.
Do you expect the vibe to change towards you now that you've knocked the host out?
I hope the French start supporting us. They're lovely people, and I think they've really looked after us throughout this World Cup, from liaison officers to security to hotel staff. Everyone's been so accommodating and really, really kind to us. So I think, especially in Toulon, it was like a home away from home. They treated us like their own family, so that's been really special. So let's hope there's some more of that going forward.
Have you been able to cast an eye on your opposition for next week? I mean, did you watch any of yesterday's?
Obviously, the guys watched the game, but I mean, I think it was all focus on France tonight. We weren't looking ahead of it. So, I think the analysis will definitely start tomorrow, and the guys will get into it. And really exciting game next week.
There are so many players playing in Japan.
Yeah.
Are there any positive effects about that?
Yeah, arigato gozaimashita. I know. Yeah, I think it was a really good performance tonight, and I think a few, obviously a lot of Japanese players out there. And yeah, I think the rugby over in Japan in the League One is very special. I think everyone over there has showed that they've improved their game and become better rugby players. And I think, yeah, the world doesn't really get to see a lot of League One rugby, and I hope in the future that it can be broadcasted around the world so people can see the level of rugby over there. So, yeah.
Was there a specific big moment for you in the...
I think the whole game was filled with big moments. I think from both sides, I think there were some massive moments throughout the game, almost too many to speak about now. But I think in the end, we obviously played the big moments better and came out on the winning side. I think it could have gone either way, you know. So, yeah, we're just very, very happy with the win.
How do you manage coming out of a bruising game like this with a 6-day turnaround? Is there anything
really? I think you just kind of... treated like any other 6-day turnaround. We've obviously experienced it in the past. We know what it takes to get the body back to 100%. So yeah, obviously a big focus on recovery and yeah, just getting ourselves focused and ready.
Jesse, you're not the host again. Second World Cup in a row. Do you call on the French public to now get behind you guys?
No, I mean, as I said previously, the French have been so amazing to us, even this week playing against the hosts. You'd think that maybe it would be different, but they were amazing to us in Toulon, in Paris, in wherever we've been. They've really treated us like family and gone over and above their way to really look after us. So it's been really special.
So, yes? You're calling them to get behind the box?
Well, I hope so. I think we get on really well with the French people and especially our liaison officers, the security, the hotel staff. So I think they will be rooting for us, I hope.
Jesse, do you agree with people saying this was your best performance in the Springbok shirt?
Yeah, I don't think, I don't want to kind of speak about my, I think the team was really, really good. And I think a lot of guys put up their hands. I just fulfilled my role tonight and, yeah, just really happy with the results. So, yeah.
You must be happy with your own performance, though.
Yeah, I'm happy. We won. So that's all I care about. I don't really care about anything else. So if we're on the winning side, then that's all that matters. So.
How confident are you feeling at the moment when you take the field? You're hitting some really good form. You must feel great when you get out there at the minute.
Yeah, I think anytime you pull a green and gold jersey over your head, you feel great. And I think, yeah, hopefully just more of the same kind of... performances going forward would be great, but yeah, it starts with guys up front and the guys inside me really doing the hard work, and that creates opportunities.
You're with Liam Delcom and Brendan Nell on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Now the boxer got England. It's strange because I saw a wonderful meme this week of a bunch of guys saying you don't deserve to be in the semi-final to guys obviously got the England flag on. And he replied, yes, but I am in the semi-final, which is strange because they're the only unbeaten team, but you wouldn't put money on them if you were better.
No, you wouldn't. It's a weird thing. And I think we've seen this before with other World Cups where they were poor in the World Cup, where they lost pool games. And then somehow manufacture a way to get into the final. So no, it's not unfamiliar territory for them. They do, however, tend to slip up in semi-finals and even in the final. They don't have a great record when they've obviously famously won it once in 2003. But for the rest, when it comes to semi-finals and finals, not a great record. And also not a great record against South Africa. I mean, this will now be, I think, the fifth meeting, and they've only won once. I'm talking about the World Cup matches now. And there's clearly, I mean, if you look at the stats that's been released from the quarterfinals, there are clear areas where they need to improve. The same goes for the box. In some of the attack, they need to get better. Ironically, they were a lot better in the red zone last week than they were, say, against Ireland, where they created a lot of opportunities. They were more ruthless in that last weekend. But generally speaking, in that game, they created very little. It was only when they really got a sniff close to the line that they capitalized.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for England, I mean, they there are clear areas where they need to brush up.
Yeah, I was looking at a stat today where I saw quite an interesting stat in one of the UK papers where they said when we scored our third try, South Africa had only been in France's 22 for 99 seconds in the entire half when we'd scored our third try. So that just Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty good. I suppose the big worry is how much, and this, I suppose, for both New Zealand and South Africa, is just how much mentally these contests, because they were so intense, because they were so, just high quality, how much that's taken out of you and whether you can lift yourself again the next week. We saw, in 2019, New Zealand played almost their final against Ireland, beating them quite handsomely. England played their final almost against New Zealand in the semi-final, and obviously we played ours in the final. But I think that's probably the biggest danger that we've got at the moment, that maybe mentally that we don't get ourselves up again.
Yeah, but the thing that sets the box apart is the deeper they go into these tournaments, the better they become. I mean, they're able to sort of put last week behind them. They move forward. They draw from that, from whatever skirmish they were in. Whereas with other teams, as you well point out, that maybe that just psychologically, emotionally, they leave so much out there that they're unable to sort of fully recover. But, the Springboks, throughout the existence in World Cup rugby, haven't shown that at all. In fact, you don't want to meet them in the semi-final or final because, the record shows they'll beat you.
And Rusty's been at his best this week as well. Let's see, we're going to listen to a clip now of him. He basically turned up at a second press conference in 2 days. And because this one, as Alex Lowe in the Times pointed out, he probably knew the English writers were going to be there. So that was probably the reason. I'd quite believe that. And then proceeded to troll them by selecting their team for them in the press conference.
Yes, I think to talk about the All Blacks will be disrespectful to England because they're a massive, massive speed bump for us to get over. I would say a portal. Then a speed bump because it's just looking at I'll get to New Zealand. As I was looking at the possible teams that I think can play. I think we average 200 minutes per player, they 260. I think the average caps of our team will be about 54, they'll be about 59. I think the average age of our team is 30, the average age of their team are 29. And then the average weight is 104 and 105. So it's two teams, England's unbeaten. They stuck to their guns. Both weeks since he's been appointed, and they kept believing on what they're doing, and it's paying off. And you can see their team full of belief, and they will be definitely hurting from not just last year when we beat them, but also from the World Cup final in 2009. So they will be a very, very desperate team. And a team which you respect.
Alex Lowe from the Times. I'm very interested to know what that England team is.
Who is the team?
Yeah,
now we're guessing, obviously. We talked to the basic guys, Gaines, George, Sinclair, Doge, Chisholm, Laws, Curry, Earl, Mitchell, Farrell, Bailey, Dulagi, Marchant, May, Marcus Smith or Stewart. Then Mahler, Cole, George, Pally, Ben Young, so Danny, George Ford, and Ollie. That's who we think, but we might be totally wrong.
So wow. Liam, do you think? There's obviously mind games, and obviously he's trying to make them think that he knows what they're going to pick, and they're ready for whatever they throw at them.
Yeah, and why not? It's that stage of the competition. Chuck something out there and see what comes back. He's quite good at these things. And he would have given a lot of thought before he opened his mouth. So, I think there's no doubt that, England will take note of what he said. Whether they'll take it seriously, of course, that's entirely up to them. But it will at least catch the attention.
Yeah, I saw Alex also, who's a mate of ours as well, called Rusty a pantomime villain akin to Eddie Jones. And my first thought about that was, geez, how boring would rugby be without characters? And if we wanted to be like Steve Borthwick, we'd have a job in the world. So thank goodness for somebody like Rusty and makes it interesting for us all, gives us, and the box have given the world something to talk about the entire tournament. So why should it change now?
Yeah. Coaches are a funny breed. I mean, most of them have you know, a fair whack of life experience. They obviously know the game inside out, and they most of them have a story to tell. But the game has changed so much over the last, I don't know how many years, where, you know, we hide behind this word professionalism. So what tends to happen is every chance they get to speak behind a microphone, everything is so sterile, and it, like, you know, the things that they probably want to say, they can't say. You know, some guys get away with it. Some guys, you know, they go down that path, like Eddie Jones. But most of them, you know, shy away, and it's a shame.
Yeah, I know. It is a shame. But what are your hopes before we go to our final clip for the day, where I had a chat with New Zealand. I don't know if I should call him Shock Jock. Would you call Martin Devlin Shock Jock?
If he's not, he's pretty close. He's
definitely a man who speaks his mind, and definitely a guy to get a good take on New Zealand rugby as well. But before we go to him, I had a good chat with him. Your predictions for the weekend, Liam? How do you think the games are going to go?
I think it'll go to script. To a large degree, well, at least two of the first two quarterfinals kind of went to script, as far as I'm concerned. And of course, the other two Paris ones were just, you could probably toss a coin. But this weekend, I think it's fully back to script. I think New Zealand will keep Argentina at arm's length and then put a few on them towards the end. And pretty much the same would hold true for South Africa, England. I think, though, I think South Africa will need to look back, and I think they're aware of this, to the semi-final against Wales in 2019, where that game became uncomfortably close. It was a game that Wales could have won towards the end. And it, I won't say only because that'll be unfair, but to a large degree, South Africa kept them in that game. If they were prepared to engage a higher gear, they would have been able to put a comfortable buffer between themselves and Wales. I don't think they want to do that again. Yeah. You know, keep England vaguely interested. I think they should look for a fast start and keep going.
And I think the other thing is as well is probably this squad's got a bit more depth and a bit more versatile. Yes. And and probably is a lot more attacking. In fact, they are. The stats say they attack almost double the amount of times, and their kicks in games are down to 21 a game, where the average is on 33. The most in the tournament is 33 as well at this moment. And guess who is that team that kicks 33 times?
Well, that's probably France.
England are the team that kick the most in the tournament. So you can see a lot of high balls and a lot of question marks on their and I think Russie was trying to point that out as well about whether they pick Marcus Smith or Freddie Stewart, because Freddie Stewart's obviously great under the high ball. And I think there's a bit of a lull that they feel that the one's got a bit more attacking nuance and the other one doesn't.
Yeah, and also with Marcus Smith is they haven't been clear about what the, you know, the injury is. I know he had this lip issue in the game. He got obviously bashed there, and then he got bashed again, and he had a bandage around the head towards the end. They made it sound as if he should be okay. But of course, they'll obviously just refer to Stewart if there is an issue, which takes some of the attacking options away, I would imagine, if that's the case. But it won't be a new thing for Borthwick, because he has not picked an unchanged team since he became England coach. So tinkering is very much his thing. He'll look at the opposition and make a judgment call. Or it could also be, you know, for a bloke who's early-ish in his reign as his head coach, not knowing all his players just yet and seeing what comes out. By now, obviously, if you're in a World Cup semi-final, you should have a fair idea of, you know, what your best 15, your starting 15 should be, and your best 23 for match day. But, if he does make changes, it certainly won't catch anybody by surprise.
And we have to obviously say that we're recording this before both teams have been named. So probably some of you might listen to this after the teams have been named. But, my take is probably that both semifinals are going to be probably relatively close till about 50 minutes. And then both the two, South Africa and New Zealand, will probably pull away then. As well, I got 4 out of 4 in my Super Brew last week, which I thought was quite a decent achievement, given the stakes. So let's hope I'm right again this weekend, and we have the dream Springbok All Black final, which we haven't had since 1995.
Well done, Mr. Yellow Cap.
Well, yeah, let's hope. I'm still way behind on the rest because I forgot to enter scores for a round or two, but that's what happens in these things. Anyway, but listen, thanks, Liam. Enjoy Paris. Are you still far away from where the Boks are? I see they're having press conferences in strange little buildings around Paris.
I'm even further away now. They're way north. I'm in the southwest. So I'm even further away this week.
Well, enjoy what Paris has got left for you and stay away from the bed bugs. And enjoy the games. I think we all wish we could be there. We're going to go across to now chatting to Martin Devlin, a New Zealand radio host, and just his thoughts of where New Zealand are and obviously South Africa as chances and the chances of that dream final.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Okay, so semi-finals week, and we're now talking to a good old mate of mine from New Zealand, Martin Devlin. Marty, you're very well known for your opinions in New Zealand. Let's start off with that. Did you see the All Blacks coming through that game? I saw you were quite happy with the result.
Brendan, great to talk to you as always. Look, there was a clip I put on Twitter, and it just got so many views. I'm very grateful to everyone who actually looked at the maniac who was going berserk at the end of that game. It's so difficult for me. I'm sitting in a press box, but look, I'm just a silly old fan. I've only ever been a fan. I'm a fan with a microphone, and that's the privilege that I get so close to it. In all honesty, I hoped that the All Blacks would have that performance in us, but the reality of it is, and you go back to the semi-final in Tokyo, where we got absolutely belted by England, but, you know, we actually track back, if you're honest, perhaps to that Lions series in 2017, when after 2015 and that legendary All Black side, it just started to unravel a little. You know, every other team all of a sudden started to find holes in us, whether it's rush defence, whether it's box kicks, whatever it is. You know, we were replacing generational players who had played 100 tests. You look at our midfield, Conrad and Ma'a, Dan Carter, Aaron Smith. You look at the two locks who had won, you know, so much between them. You look at that loose forward trio of McCaw and Kieran Reid and Jerome Kano. The front row, Owen Franks had played 100. Kevin had played 100. All of that, okay. So it was only, you know, natural that there was going to be a transition. And, you know, a lot of us felt that this current group of players weren't living on past glories, but what they weren't doing was they weren't living up to past glories, if you know what I mean. And so many unwanted records, yeah. Brendan, you know, losing to Argentina at home, losing to them away, losing to Ireland at home, a series for the first time in 94, a series to Ireland. I can go on. Losing to you Boks at Twickers in a record score, losing for the first time in a pool match. And I put that question to Ian Foster before the Ireland game that, look, you know, if we lose, statistically, we're the worst All Black team that's ever gone to a World Cup. So when you put all of that on that side of the ledger, then, you know, you're looking at the All Black side and going, but we played like that in Joburg and we played in bits and pieces in games at that level again. Could we do it against an Irish team that brought everything that they had? So I can't be, you know, dishonest to you and say, hey, I expected that. I loved it. I thrived on it, of course. But I went into that game very nervous and very worried.
Well, I'm sure you were biting your fingernails with the 34 phases right at the end there. That was, I mean, it was ridiculous. I couldn't sit the last 20 minutes of our game. I was pacing up and down watching it, but I'm sure pretty much the same for you.
Yeah, look, it was. And, you know, congratulations to South Africa Springbok fans. That was an absolutely titanic effort, given the fact that, you know, you were 7-0 down. And, of course, that was a deliberate knock-on. And don't even argue with me, that was a bloody deliberate knock-on. And you perhaps should have been more... But look, you know, that last phase from the All Blacks, where we were sitting, and we were up in the gods at the media centre, and the advantages, you know, Brendan, and I just want to paint a picture here for everyone who's listening to this podcast, is when you watch it on TV, you get a very narrow view of what's happening on the field because the cameras are all around where the ball is. When you're watching from up above, you get the whole chessboard and you get to see all the pieces on it and you get to see where all the players are standing. And that gives you a better perspective of things like depth of where the play is going. And I'll give you one good example. Every time in the second half, Ireland went out left, their left winger, James Lowe, was right on the touchline. Now, the closest the play got to him was probably about halfway across the field. So I'm talking, you'd need to sling a 25-metre pass to get to him. So repeatedly, if you watch it again, they were continually cutting back inside because there was no men out there between the last guy and James. And so our guys were structuring the defence like that. In the end, we called it a bit of a cut-and-paste job. As long as our guys were making their one-on-one tackles, Ireland, look, in those 34 phases, or, you know, maybe 35 or 36, but in the last 10 to 15 of those, they were really flat flat-footed, and they didn't really know where to go. And so, you know, Ian Foster said afterwards as well, it was incredibly tense because you only need one error and then it's all over. But as long as our guys, you know, believed in themselves, trusted in that defence, and he said he felt quite calm. I didn't feel calm, but I understood what he was saying. And if you go back and watch your replay, he's exactly right.
Yeah, well, does this, I was going to ask you, as a New Zealander, does this save Fozzie yet, or does he have to win it? And if he does win it, the whole tournament, does that save him? I know Razor's coming in, but I know Fozzie is not exactly the most well-liked person in New Zealand rugby.
And that's really unfair. Look, I've been one of the few people in my position in the media who've actually stood up for this guy. He's a really decent man. He displays a lot of dignity. He displays a lot of class. Brendan, I don't think even if we win the World Cup that he's going to get the credit that he deserves. It'll go to Joe Schmidt and it'll go to Jason Ryan. Of course, if we don't win, all the crap goes his way, as it always has done. And again, look, you know, I go back to the players. You know, he doesn't have the same playing group that Shag had in 2015. And most of these guys, you know, were involved in the last 4 years of all of these, as I just described, unwanted All Black records. My challenge has always been to these players, lift yourselves and win these games. I don't know how much the coach has an influence. Of course, tactically, he's got to be involved. He picks the players. He stayed very loyal to the same group of guys. So those have got to be two ticks in his favour. Maybe he should have, you know, this is the criticism he faces. Maybe he should have dropped some of those blokes, you know, instead of staying with the tried and true. But they came through for him in the biggest game of his career as the All Black coach. Also, when you add to this, Brendan, when he started, I'm not making excuses for the guy here, but when he started, the first year was COVID. Okay, so that was a complete disruption. So everything that could have possibly, you know, gone wrong in a four-year tenure has. And then, of course, you get the Scott Robertson thing and the way that the New Zealand Rugby Union have handled that, which has been, look, I mean, any person in any employment position, if all of a sudden the flash new guy in the safari suit walks in with the, you know, and he's a surfer and everyone loves him and he's doing a dance in the office and you're going, hang on, what about me? I'm not chopped liver over here, mate. I mean, I'm still doing the job. So all of those distractions aside, he could have spat the dummy big time. He hasn't. You know, I don't want, you know, yeah. I don't want to say, hey, let's win it for Fozzie because, you know, I mean, we've just got to win it because those players want to win it first and foremost for themselves. But in answer to your question, a very long-winded way of saying, I don't believe he's going to get the credit for this regardless.
Okay, and then just finally, your calls on the two semifinals. Tell me where you think it's going to go.
I can't help but go for the, you know, the romanticism of that 1995 repeat final, which we owe you for. And there's a couple of things about that final. One of them, of course, is, you know, the questions about the hamburgers and the tea and the waitress and all of those. I mean, we laugh about that all of the time, me and you. The other one is, if you go back and watch that tape, one of those Andrew Merton's drop kicks in overtime went through. They called it as though it went over the bloody goalpost and it went through. I just think, Brendan, to be honest.
And Ruben Kruger scored.
There you go. Look, I think we have to be too strong for Argentina. And that's just being, you know, the reality and the honesty of it. You know, if the All Blacks lost the semi-final, this would probably be their single worst loss in any World Cup. Because no disrespect to our Argentinian opponents, who we'd love, of course, but at the same time, this is an All Black side that should put them away. Absolutely should. As far as the other semi-final goes, the banana skin for South Africa for me is England have looked awful all tournament. Okay, against Argentina, they played pretty well with 14 men, but they looked awful during the Six Nations. Steve Borthwick has got them playing. It's almost within this confined little box. And you just wonder, you know, they've got players that were there in 2019 that lost, that are going to have a massive motivation. I saw Atoje probably play his best game in his last game against Fiji that he has in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether or not England have the lift in performance that the All Blacks had in Ireland, whether they can do the equivalent. And that's the big unknown going into this, because on paper, again, you guys should put them away.
Yeah, I think the way, I mean, what we're all hoping for is, we all think back to Chisholm Colby and, you know, skinning Owen Farrell, and we all love to hate Owen Farrell, you know, from the outside. But you know, they've got a lot of experience. They've got the pack that could probably, if they have that one game, and that's what we always worry about, is that just that one game that they could have, you know. And I think that's what our worry is. And again, how much has these two quarterfinals taken out of the teams mentally? You know, I think that's a big worry.
I'll just add this finally then. You know, I've wrote a word down before we started talking, which was attrition. And when you look at, let's just assume, we're not presuming, let's just assume, for example, that, because that's always an ass of you and me if I get this wrong, of course, isn't it? So let's assume that the All Blacks in the box make that final. New Zealand has played a really tough one against France. We then played the Seychelles, the Canary Islands and Stewart Island. Then we played a really tough one against Ireland. No disrespect to those opponents, I'm just being silly. Then we play Argentina. So we've perhaps got two and three quarters really tough games before the final. You guys have played Ireland, Titanic match, tough game against Tonga. Okay, you had a hard one against Scotland, a brutal match against France. Now you've got England. Count them on your fingers. By the time you get to that final, you've played six, we've played three. Does that take its toll?
I'd count it as a final point with just saying that the Boxer probably got as much depth as the All Blacks had in 2011, 2015. They could play two different teams. So I think they're probably looking at it that way. So hopefully that's not a factor. But hey, we're first going to get through this this weekend. Marty, thanks for the chat and enjoy it up there in Paris. Go have a few more croissants and whatever else, croque monsieur and those type of things, and find some French wine to enjoy.
Tula Tadusha Papatu. See you in the final, my friend.
And as you can see, even the New Zealanders are hoping for the dream final, South Africa, New Zealand. Although I think, like Marty says, we want to stay away from any waitresses, hotel staff, dodgy prawns and dodgy food. And as I said, bed bugs. We obviously hope it's a great final and we hope we get the final we want. Liam, that's it all for me. Maybe you can just sign us off from Paris.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the bed bugs. I hope none of those things, come back to bite them or end up on a plate or something like that. So, let's hope for some, fairly plain sailing over the last week and a half of this tournament.
We'll see you guys next week where we'll know if we've got the dream final or not. But keep listening, and thanks for listening this episode. This is To The Last Drop.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.